Whoa, hang on a second. Am I appropriately dressed for this, Larry? Who's coming out?
Well, you don't have to get on your knees. This isn't the Queen, you know. It's pompous Lord Regal.
Oh, boy.
From Television City in Hollywood,
this podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Discretionary viewer participation is advised for the following professional wrestling exhibition.
Due to the coronavirus pandemic, Greetings from Allentown is not taped in front of a live studio audience.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 164 of Greetings from Allentown. I am your host, Peter Winson. And while last week I went into Jim Crockett Promotions for the year 1986, when things were pretty red hot, I figured I would go to the child promotion of JCP. That'd be World Championship Wrestling. I guess child could mean a lot of things, given where WCW ended up near the end. But this is April 27th, 1997, edition of WCW Pro. And I know a lot of people, well, why don't you just do Nitro, or why don't you do the Saturday Night Show? No, I am going back to my bread and butter, my heritage on this show, which is WCW C and even D shows. I don't even know if Pro would be classified as C or D. I'm trying to think of what the pecking order would be. I think it would be Nitro, and then Saturday Night. And then it comes down to Pro or Worldwide. I think Pro might be a little bit ahead of Worldwide, but that even still, that makes it the C show. And it's also been a long time since I've done a 1997 show for WCW. It was episode 99, so that was over a year ago. And WCW in that year, for all of its faults that we now realize looking back at it, it got me back into wrestling in the summertime. And also, with it being right before when I graduated from high school, it's a pretty fun time in my life, so maybe it'll trigger positive memories as I'm now in week 5 of this quarantine. But anyway, before I get into all that, why don't I get my plugs? You can email show, greetingsfromallentown@gmail.com, facebook.com/greetingsfromallentown. Give me a follow on Twitter, @GFAllentownPod. That is @GFAllentownPod. And you may be listening to the show on the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Do check out the other great shows on Pro Wrestling Only, including the dramatic return of WorldCast last week, which I was very, very happy. I kind of saved it just in case for a couple of days. Like, is this real? Are they actually back and talking about WorldCast in December of 83? And I listened to it on the way back from my mother's house after Easter, which was basically I go and I drop off a prepared meal for her. Actually, two prepared meals, given the amount of food it was. And she stands on the porch, and I stand in the driveway at a relatively safe distance while wearing a mask for the first half of the time, and then realizing she probably couldn't hear me from that far away. So I just pulled out the mask at that point. So I don't want to talk about the whole quarantine thing at this point, because, I mean, it is what it is. So really, I'm just trying to pursue new endeavors as I'm doing this. Like I said, I want to do some WCW shows going up, because I feel like I've neglected them somewhat. But there are other things that I have not done that I need to get back into. I don't know when I was given this kit. It was for Christmas, either last year or the year before. I don't even remember, because this past Christmas, I don't remember a damn thing, because I was hobbling around and couldn't really eat anything. It was a hot sauce fermentation kit. So over the weekend, cutting up a bunch of peppers with my wife, red peppers and jalapeno green peppers, putting in carrots, onions, all this other stuff, and we're going to ferment it for a couple of weeks. Now, this is going to end up being a brown hot sauce because it's red and green. Probably should have chose one or the other, but you know, when you're in the supermarket, as I was, and I'm just scooping out half the entire thing of the red chilies that they were selling, I was starting to feel a little self-conscious. And the whole concept of being in the supermarket right now is to get in and out of there as quickly as possible. I mean, yes, I tried to do a $3 off coupon when I went to the pharmacy to get Claritin D, which was the only reason why I was at the supermarket, because I need to get that every 2 weeks because they don't let you buy more than 15 of them at a time. And the coupon didn't work, and I decided that the time was worth more than the $3 I could save. But I'm very excited for that hot sauce, which will be ready around the time of my birthday, and hopefully I can make wings or use it for something fairly quickly. But another thing that I have not done since I've been living in this house, which is now getting close to 10 years, is I had not brewed beer with my wife, and we went ahead and did this. We ordered a kit from, there's a store in Woburn, Massachusetts called the Beer, Wine, and Hobby. And, I mean, you can order from there too, but we already have like the five, you know, the carboy, the bucket, the 5 gallon bucket barrel and the airlock and all the very, like the, all the setup kit that you need. We ordered something that we can make a Grolsch imitation. So basically a Kolsch style beer. But we forgot to factor in a couple of things. Yes, we know how to make the beer. We know how to brew the beer and, you know, get everything going with the wort. And, you know, it's really just following the instructions. The problem is with a Kolsch, you have to pitch the yeast with the wort at a much cooler temperature. So you're boiling it, and then you got to cool it fast. But I don't have 30 pounds of ice to quickly cool it. And we don't have that coil thing that you can use to quickly cool it as well. So right now, it is sitting in my refrigerator where I had purchased a lot of beer at Medusa Brewing Company. And I know that sounds like a rerun, but no, I actually went back and bought $100 worth of beer again because I'm an insane person and I really want to support them. But now there's a 5 gallon bucket of homebrewed beer that I am desperately trying to cool the wort so that we can pitch the yeast as I'm talking to you right now. Who knows? I might be able to provide updates as I go along through this show. But I'm very excited because I think the last time I actually made beer was for my groomsmen in my wedding back in 2010. And even then, I went to a shop down in Framingham where they would actually provide great assistance for that sort of thing, so it was able to come out a lot better. So I'm very eager to, I mean, I'm not going to be drinking any of the beer until probably close to Memorial Day, but Kolsch is a summer beer, and I've said in the past on this podcast that a brewery will really get my attention if they make a Kolsch. So I'm very excited for that. Now, of course, Medusa does not have a Kolsch, but I basically bought every other beer that they happen to have. So it's really just a matter of trying to survive this thing. I don't want to go too far into it. having Zoom calls with my friends where I am drinking far too much beer during it seems to be the pattern on Friday or Saturday, where it lasts up to 4 hours and my blood alcohol level is about 0.17. But I am coherent enough to successfully break down the Larry Bird steals the ball against the Pistons play from memory, including critiques of the play that the Celtics designed before that, which was an isolation play for Larry Bird on the left side against Bajorn. I mean, I love Larry Bird, and I think you've figured that out from listening to me these last few weeks because I cannot stop watching NBA games from the 80s, but Larry Bird is not Allen Iverson. You don't want him going one-on-one on an ISO play. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. And speaking of that word, ridiculous, of course, that brings me to WCW. There's a beautiful new account on YouTube that has uploaded some WCW stuff. Now, this is YouTube recommendations get a bad rap because apparently it just sort of takes you into more extreme stuff, whether it be politics or what have you. But the fact that it was, I noticed, oh my God, this person has like WCW Saturday Nights from 1995, like stuff that's not even on the WWE network. This is the junk that I need. I need this injected into my veins.
You're the only one I know who's got the good stuff, and I need a bad baby because I feel like I got bugs crawling up my skin.
Every time I see something like this on YouTube, I immediately have to download it. Like, yes, I have to do a show on this soon while it's actually up there. You might say, well, why WCW? Why don't you just do more ECW shows because they're on the network? And I've said 1,000 times, I can't watch ECW the way it is on the network because it's so changed around, not just the music, but you lose some of the montages. I mean, you know, the Pulp Fiction, I guess a lot of that is the music changed, but I could probably get over that. But the other issue I have with like ECW is it's very hard to take notes because on some of the stuff that was going on, because for whatever reason I have a hard time researching those. For like World Class, I've done one show, and I don't know. I mean, there's another show on World Class on this very network. But there's also the fact that sometimes it gets a little depressing when you're talking about Von Erichs. Like, how many dead family members can I talk about before I want to go out in the woods and blow my brains out? Or as it's known as, the Chris Von Erich. Sorry for getting dark here, but that's the way that their family turned out. I mean, for God's sakes, Fritz, not exactly father of the year. So WCW, it's like the fun comedy that you return to again and again. It's like an Adam Sandler movie. You know, fits right in. You know, I enjoyed them when I was in high school. You know, that era between 1995 and 2000 when, you know, I liked all the Adam Sandler movies. And then Little Nicky happened, and it pretty much went to crap at that point. So I actually, you know, in accordance with all of this, I've actually planned my next few shows coming up, which is nice. Unlike GFA Live, for which I released another episode on Saturday with my good pal Keithy, the voice of Greetings from Allentown, on All Japan Pro Wrestling from 1988. And that was very fun to do, in part because we could get those out, bang those out so quickly. And when I'm recording this by myself, sometimes I have a little bit of difficulty, especially with this intro. And then once I get rolling, it's fine, except I look and I see that I've been talking now for close to 11 minutes, and it's like, okay, is this intro running a little bit long here? Because I'm not even halfway through what my intro notes were. Springtime, I'd said that I wanted to do a show from the month of April somewhere, so this accomplishes that goal. Spring in WCW, once Nitro started, could be a very, very odd time. Hulk Hogan would usually disappear at this time of year. In 96, he's on that hiatus that doesn't end until he turns at Bash the Beach. In 97, he's not around for whatever reason, and again, you don't really see him until closer to Bash at the Beach, although you see him on Nitro in June. And there's a reason for this, and they mentioned it a couple of times on the show, is that the NBA took priority on TNT, and Nitro was down to a one-hour show starting at 7 p.m. Eastern on the following night after this, April 28th of 97. And you see this in 96, it was a one-hour show, so it's not as big a deal, but here, it's a two-hour show, so you're cutting it in half. The rating isn't going to be as good because it's not at the same time, and Hulk Hogan would always pull that crap where he would disappear just at the right moment when the ratings were going to dip, so that he could say, well, I left and the ratings went down. So, you know, he's not a stupid person, but it is a little cynical on his part. By the way, the NBA game on the Monday night was this should tell you how long ago this was in the year 1997. It makes me feel old because, I mean, like I said, I graduated from high school weeks after this. The New York Knickerbockers swept their first-round NBA playoff series against the Charlotte Hornets, the original Charlotte Hornets, beating them by a score of 104-95. It was a Larry Johnson revenge series because LJ, Grandmama, whatever you want to call him, had been traded for Anthony Mason the previous summer, but the Knicks move on to the second round. So back to wrestling. The NWO is still cool, I guess, although as I'm watching it, they keep saying, bite me, to every single authority figure. And in looking back, I know that they can't say, you know, certain words that might start with F or whatever, but it was just kind of like, that's really the best you can do, guys. I mean, not exactly the witty banner, but then again, not the Algonquin Roundtable, those guys. I mean, Kevin Nash doesn't really know the difference between an adjective and a verb. So, I mean, am I really expecting him to coin a revolutionary phrase, I guess? I mean, I guess he did coin where the big boys play for them, which they would use for quite some time. The NWO still being cool. Of course, they didn't know how to end it in time. But, you know, as I always say on the show, put yourself in the shoes of somebody watching it at the time period in 1997. Now, you might argue with me and be like, well, Winston, you're talking about the NWO, but none of those guys are going to turn up on WCW Pro. I'm like, well, yes, that's the freaking point. That's why WCW Pro is awesome, because the charm of World Championship Wrestling, whether it be in 97 or even up to like 99 or even the years before that, is the mid-card is just free-flowing with all varied and interesting characters, and most of it really holds up. Especially, like, even in this year, where some of the NWO stuff does get a little tiresome in the middle of the year, I guess 1996 would be a better overall year if you're just going to go like pound for pound, January to December calendar year. I might go with 96 instead of 97, especially considering how Starcade ended up in at the end of 1997. But in any event, my love of the C&D shows is well documented, and there's one match on the show involving Lord Steven Regal that I remember watching back in 1997, even though this would have been before I started watching wrestling again. So I don't know how I ended up seeing this match, but I remembered the finish. Maybe I watched it only like 5 years ago on YouTube, and I remember somehow I transferred that to having seen it in 1997. Who knows? But the guys on this show today, Conan, Hugh Morris, as I said, Lord Steven Regal, and then a couple of the WCW matches where they would just throw two guys together on these shows and they would just have a match, and it would lead to, you know, some very, very random pairings. Prince Iaukea versus Chavo Guerrero Jr., maybe a little bit less random because they're kind of on the same level. It seems like maybe a natural interaction. But Ice Train versus La Parca, I am totally here for stuff like that. I mean, it might not be the most random match in WCW history, but the fact that it was around to give that sort of quality entertainment to us will actually sustain us through the quarantine that I vowed not to mention a couple of times earlier in this intro. So, without any further ado, why don't I just get right to it? WCW Pro for April 27th, 1997.
The glass all the way to center. Back again by Duchesne.
The difference might be a little bit less pronounced these days, especially since first round of the playoffs may not even happen for the NBA or the NHL, but back then, when the NBA did a best of five first round, the NHL's first round was way better because the NBA ones would be mostly three-game sweeps. Just looking at 1997, I mean, and usually in the NBA, the home team ends up winning most of the games anyway, but like top seeds, out of eight series, four of them ended up in a sweep that year. So it all feels kind of pointless from, you know, in the NBA. In the NHL, you have these seven-game series where some of them go to overtime, at like Dallas and Edmonton, which I would play, but I already played it in episode 97, and I really don't want to repeat my thoughts on Todd Marchant. I mean, it really doesn't matter to a lot of you. But mainly that's for Steve Bennett, Buffalo Sabres, winning a Game 7 in overtime at home over the Ottawa Senators, who had qualified for the playoffs for the very first time. I just did not enjoy that series at all because neither team could freaking score. I mean, the most number of goals scored in a game combined was 5. And Dominic Hasek wasn't even in net for the Sabres because he had an alleged, I think it was a groin or thigh injury, and he also assaulted a reporter. So I think he would fit in with certain political groups in this country with his views towards the media. So the cold open for WCW Pro is Kevin Nash saying "bite me" to J.J. Dillon as J.J. is trying to be the parent to the NWO is not really going to work. And we meet our hosts for the Pro. It's not Dusty Rhodes, unfortunately, which is a shame because the last time I did a WCW 97 show, it was all because Dusty was there. In this case, we got Scott Hudson and Larry Zbysko. And here's the thing with Scott Hudson. I think a lot of people don't really like him as an announcer. I really don't have much of an opinion, but he is kind of the victim of what we in New England call the Dale Arnold curse, which is, the way I interpret it is, an announcer who is calling a product, like a sports team, and he's the play-by-play announcer when the sports team isn't very good, when they're having their worst seasons. Dale Arnold called Boston Bruins games from 1995 through 2007. They were a good team, playoffs 28 consecutive years before he started calling games. And then it was probably the least successful 12-year stretch in the last 50 years that the Bruins have had. Same for the New England Patriots. He became their radio announcer right around the point where they were having 1-15 seasons in 1990. Same for Scott Hudson. You don't really see him much before this, but then you start seeing a lot of Scott Hudson as you get into like 1999 and 2000. In fact, I think he was, last time I saw him was when I did the WCW Saturday Night Show from 1999. Again, I have no real issue from him, but I do have one very strong opinion, and it's that if they ever made a movie about, I don't know, WCW Pro from this time period, I would want Scott Adsit to play Scott Hudson, because they certainly resemble each other, at least similar hairlines. And I'm so glad to actually see Larry Zbysko as the co-host here. Now, I know Keithy on GFA Live said he was the most overrated guy in the history of pro wrestling. I disagree. There's at least a few people who I think are more overhyped than him. But having Larry there, I'm very excited about that, because he's going to get to talk for these intervals. And it allows me to bring back one of my favorite bits from this show, which is the television show According to Larry. Because Larry Zbysko, for those who are uninitiated to this, because Larry Zbysko has a very strong resemblance to the actor Jim Belushi, I figured I would just, you know, call whenever Zbysko says something According to Larry in honor of the 2000s ABC television program starring Jim Belushi, According to Jim. On this edition of According to Larry, Zbysko gives his thoughts on the recent appointment of J.J. Dillon to become head of the WCW Executive Committee.
Oh, yes, bubble, bubble, turmoil and trouble for the new world order. All of Bischoff's fiascos will now be straightened out because WCW has a new leader with corporate authority, Mr. J.J. Dillon. And little sarcastic punks like Scott Hall and Kevin Nash and Six are going to have a different attitude after Slamboree.
I have to admit, I had no idea what the hell Zbysko was saying at the beginning of that when he's saying, bubble, bubble, turmoil, and trouble. It's actually misquoting a line from Shakespeare's Macbeth, which is, double, double, toil, and trouble, which is said by supernatural beings in Macbeth. I don't know. I haven't read that since high school. So really, actually, probably around the time of when this show would have aired. So had I watched this show live, maybe I would have gotten it. But since he misquoted the line, who knows if I would have. Plus, they tell us about some of the matches on Slamboree coming up. And very interesting card in that you got former and current NFL player. I almost said former because I was thinking of Mongo McMichael, but of course he's a regular in WCW as a member of the Horsebit at that time. But Ric Flair returns after a lengthy hiatus after having a surgery done on, I believe it was his shoulder. So he finally returns in May of 97. You don't really think of that absence for Flair. You think of the one in 98 where he's gone, the lawsuit, and it's very noticeable that he's not there. But in early 97, you get that weird horseman thing with Jeff Jarrett that, you know, quite honestly, makes everybody want to throw up. More on Slamboree coming up a little bit later.
Well, get ready, Scott, for one of the members of the Dungeon of Doom, Conan. He'll be coming out.
When I saw this, I was like, what? The Dungeon of Doom is something that still exists in the year 1997 at WCW? And as a matter of fact, it lasts more than 6 months of the year. It doesn't disband until the Bash at the Beach when Sullivan loses the career-ending match against that other guy. I can't remember his name. But now that I think about it, I mean, the Dungeon of Doom seems like it had outlived its usefulness in 1997, but in one very important way, it was formed in order to end Hulkamania. So really, at Bash the Beach 96, once Hogan turns and becomes NWO, it's accomplished its goals. It can disband now. It's like a private equity fund that has returned all the money to the investors. Sorry, that's what I do now, and that's all I can really think about. But yeah, the Dungeon of Doom apparently was a success at the end of the day from a kayfabe perspective, because it wanted to end Hulkamania, and it did. I guess ahead of schedule before the fund was going to be dissolved or whatever the hell it was. And Conan didn't really have much to do with that, I don't think, because he wasn't one of the 30 million people in that uncensored 96 cage match, which I haven't watched in a couple of years, and I feel like I should go back and watch that. I think I enjoyed it, ironically, just because it's so silly and stupid, and it's an actual wrestling match and not just stupid vignettes where WWE is jacking themselves off for the benefit of about 25 fans. But anyway, Johnny Swinger is the opponent here for Conan. And the amazing thing about that, and I think about guys who are on shows that I'm covering who are still active, because I don't do a lot of the 2012 stuff like I did that one time. But Johnny Swinger is in Impact right now. And he's only 21 at that point in 1997. I don't know if Conan is actually wrestling, but the thing... and I have to laugh, because apparently, and this is a thing, I feel like Johnny Carson setting up a joke here, but this is actually true. Did you see this? Conan has been direct messaging people on Twitter to ask if they are listening to his podcast. And I feel like I should do the Johnny Carson, like, look around to the audience to gauge the reaction, and then some sort of punchline. But no, it's actually true that Conan has been doing that. My question is, he hasn't reached out to me at all. And I would be like, well, I don't know, Conan. I think my shit's a lot better than yours. So, quite frankly, I'm just going to listen to my own voice rather than yours. I really have never listened to a single Conan podcast, because I don't know what he could do that would be compelling to me. Like, if he talked about Mexican wrestling and why he was a big star there, maybe I would check something like that out. But then again, a lot of that would be self-serving, and I'd have to take it with a grain of salt. And if I want to listen to wrestlers BS each other, there's no limit to the amount of shoot interviews that I can listen to. This is Conan in kind of the look that you remember him from in the NWO, where he's got like the white tank top and the black pants, but he's not doing the Odele, all that garbage quite yet. Because he's still there's no room for rappers in the Dungeon of Doom. I know that. And Swinger actually starts out with the advantage, arm drags and a drop kick. That's babyface offense sequence number 81. And Conan, my complaint about him, at least in WCW, I do not watch much of his Mexican stuff. He's not very crisp in there. And maybe it's because he's already a star somewhere else, so he really doesn't have to try. But then he does that rolling thing into a clothesline where he rolls on the mat and then hits a clothesline, which is a move of his that I actually do enjoy. A basement dropkick scores and gets a two count for him, and proves that if he wanted to jump to the WWF and work in their light heavyweight division, I'm sorry, all I can think of is a good match between Great Sasuke and Taka Michinoku in the summer of 97, but for God's sakes, those dudes were spamming basement dropkicks like there were Canadian destroyers on just about every show these days. I don't know. There's something with Conan. Why was he popular? Like, in Mexico? I'm going to have to chalk that up to stuff. I've said this in the past, how I didn't understand why Jimmy Valiant was so popular in the South, and eventually I just grew to be like, you know what, screw it. I enjoy him just as much as them, but it's not going to work that way with Conan. As Swinger gets a swinger neck breaker for a two count, and hits a clothesline into the corner, and then goes for the corner mount punches. Always a popular move in front of that WCW Pro / WCW Worldwide audience, because they are being taped in the same place. But Conan hits a clothesline to the back of the head as Swinger kind of turns around after he's done his business there. That gets a two count. But Conan now hits the 187, which is a cradle DDT, which I guess isn't a terrible move. And I do like to see that the DDT is still being used as a finisher. 187, as we all learned from Snoop Doggy Dogg and from Dr. Dre, is the code, police code for murder. Glad we all learned, you know, we learned stuff from gangster rap back in the day as Conan picks up the victory here on the Pro. But for whatever reason, Larry Zbysko as a color guy, I don't really think of him as bad, but I don't really think of him as good other than, as I talked about, how he was the one consistent anti-NWO guy. But I don't know, his descriptions, and I don't know if it's the Shakespeare earlier, but I'm a little taken by it.
And he's dead!
That's a three count, kind of a cradle DDT that Conan calls the 187.
Yeah, well, that's a police code for homicide.
Whoa, wealth of information. Good call, Larry.
There's something very, very funny about the cheerful way that Larry Zbysko says, homicide! Who says that word that way? Because the only other alternate pronunciation is when Rob Van Dam, when Sabu was doing the homicidal suicide, he would always say homicidal. I think I maybe know why he did that. But anyway, we go to the next segment, which is the On the Road with 1-800-COLLECT, where usually Lee Marshall would check in from the next place that Nitro was going to be. In this case, it would be the Norfolk Scope down Norfolk, Virginia way. But we got Chris Cruz this week, who always just kind of pops in randomly in WCW, whether it be 1990, 94, or here in 97. So he's playing the role of Lee Marshall, and he's telling us about everything you can find in the greater Norfolk Hampton Roads area.
Good evening, fans. I'm in Norfolk, Virginia, center of the Virginia waterfront and site of the 17.6-mile engineering marvel, the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, the world's largest bridge tunnel complex and one of the seven wonders of the modern world. And here at Monday Nitro, you'll see the eighth wonder of the world, the Giant, and all of the stars of World Championship Wrestling at the Scope.
Bet you thought that they were all done linking the Giant to Andre the Giant in some weird way, calling him the eighth wonder of the world in 1997. I don't know. I know WCW and WWF had separate and distinct audiences a lot of the time, but just hearing that, I don't particularly care for it. I mean, there's only one eighth wonder of the world, and WWF was always careful to refer to China as the ninth wonder of the world. The Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel Complex is not one of the seven modern wonders of the world. In fact, none of them are in the United States. It did open in 1964. It is an 18-mile stretch of US 13 that connects the Hampton Roads, Norfolk area to the Delmarva Peninsula. So, like, that is Virginia at the southern tip of the peninsula. And I have been on it once. It is an $18 toll each way with some discounts built in if you return within 24 hours and other stuff. And it is pretty cool. It can feel a little harrowing, though, if you don't like being in tunnels, especially, because, I mean, you're alternating, and there can be some high winds. In fact, some vehicles are banned from the span when there are high winds. And I guess there's another expansion project going on for that. But if you're going to drive from the northeast to the Outer Banks of North Carolina for a vacation, as I did in 2016, that is certainly the way to go. I was very surprised to see Chris Cruz on this show once again. Now, this show, I did not mention this in the intro once again because I'm on drugs or something, or I just don't know what I'm doing. There are commercials on this video, which is nice. Now, 1997, you don't have the same nostalgia for the commercials as maybe you would for something in the 80s. And I'm saying that, you know, like I am a 40-year-old man, which is what I am at this time. Game for the PlayStation, WCW versus the World, which I do not remember in the least. Of course, most of my friends had Nintendo 64, but I don't recall anybody saying, oh, well, that's an awesome game. And looking at the gameplay in the ad, I'm not that crazy about it. Valvoline Oil, which has Mark Martin, the NASCAR driver, in it. I have actually heard of him, so kind of an effective ad, I guess. And Self-Dry, which we actually see in other ones, like something to help you wash your car. And the movie The Fifth Element, which came out around this time with Bruce Willis in it. But, of course, one thing gets my attention, and it's ads for sporting events. And what was on TBS at the time? Yes, it was also on TNT as well. But the NBA!
The NBA playoffs are on TBS. Wall-to-wall playoff coverage. NBA playoff action. Get it on TBS. Don't
Despite all my talking about how I've rewatched NBA games on YouTube, I will not be watching anything from 1997 anytime soon. The only thing I remember about that season was the Celtics tanking it on purpose for the entire year to try and get Tim Duncan because they had two lottery picks, and then they ended up with Chauncey Billups and Ron Mercer, and they traded Billups after 50 games. But also, like, the NBA that year, it was basically just standing around waiting for Chicago to repeat as champions, and that is, in fact, what happened. And none of the games were particularly exciting. You get a lot of teams scoring under 90 points and winning games. I mean, that does not happen nowadays because you have a generation of kids who grew up understanding the value of a three-pointer, so guys have more range. But also, I think the coaching of the NBA has changed. There were very few coaches who were promoting chucking up a lot of threes at that point in time. Promotional consideration by Shock Tarts, some kind of yo-yo, a Motel 6, which I will never speak bad about, because while they might not be the greatest hotels in the world, they did keep me warm for 2 days during a power outage in 2011, and also they were the official motel of my move to Las Vegas and coming back from Las Vegas, because, well, I had a cat with me coming back, and cats can stay for free in a Motel 6. And also some kind of faucet, which seemed like a really weird promotional consideration on a wrestling program. Like, yes, we're going to decide what kind of faucet we're buying because it's on WCW Pro. So we get a little, it's not an event center, it's just really kind of a rundown of the card for Slamboree as they play little clips of the highlights of, you know, what might have set this up. And Conan, who we just saw, and Hugh Morris are taking on the Steiner brothers in what seems like kind of an odd match, maybe just giving the Steiners something to do. Scott Steiner actually drags out the Frankensteiner in that one for the first time in a long time. I mean, Scott is jacked to the gills by this point in time, so it's a little jarring to see him get up there for that. Medusa takes on Luna in the random women's match of WCW at that time. Not a bad one. They kept it brief. It was under 6 minutes. It was perfectly fine. Now, the rest of these, I have been watching Slamboree as I've gone through this week. As I'm taping right now, I have not seen these matches. Glacier versus Mortis, which I feel like I've seen that match 100 times in WCW in 1997. And that match does run under 2 minutes from what I saw. Meng versus Chris Benoit in a death match. And all I got to say about that is the right guy prevailed in that one. Apparently not as good as you might think. They show Ultimo Dragon winning the television title, which sets him up to defend against the former champion, Lord Steven Regal. Or, excuse me, he's no longer a lord by the time of Slamboree because he has insisted on dropping that name, which I think they retconned to say that he was embarrassed by the royal family, but on Slamboree, they didn't really go into the reasons why he dropped the name. And Rey Mysterio takes on a fellow by the name of Yuji Yasaro Uka. Oh, Jesus Christ. I saw this guy's name, and I practiced it like three times earlier. And, well, anyway, you don't really see much of him. And he retires in 1999 and becomes a motorcycle mechanic of all things. But still, all in all, a fun mid-card. I mean, that Ultimo Dragon Regal match is a banger. Is that what the kids say these days, that the match was a banger? Because it absolutely was, and my heart was done good by the fact that there's a crowd chant for Regal like he's the babyface. And this is North Carolina here. We're not talking about Philadelphia. But yeah, pretty fun show from the first two or three matches that I've seen so far. Yo, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. I can't in good conscience do a 1997 show without playing that Spice Girls song, because I had a thought about the lyrics a while back, and I just need to relay it here, that the five Spice Girls are literally the easiest to hook up with in human history because they are providing an instruction manual for how to do so in that song. It's like the booklet that comes with the snowblower on how to change the oil, how to start it, all that sort of stuff, except it's how to basically plow them on a regular basis. All right, now that we've dispensed with the adult content for this week's show, our next bout is Laparca taking on Ice Train with Teddy Long, and I could not be more delighted seeing this match on this show. And I had thought immediately, like, wow, this is a really random match. Laparca versus Ice Train. It's like one of those WCW deals where they just throw two guys together and they have a match in one of the C or D shows. But as it turns out, Laparca and Ice Train had matches on virtually every WCW show. They had multiple matches, as it turns out, on Nitro, on Saturday Night, and of course the Pro here, and I believe on Worldwide as well. So this does not quite meet the Hacksaw Jim Duggan versus Super Calo criteria of being the most random WCW match. But even though they had multiple bouts, which, by the way, Ice Train seemed to be the victor in just about all of them. No spoiler alert or anything. I mean, you kind of know how this is going to turn out, because this is Laparca before he has the chairman gimmick. There's none of that stuff going on. He's basically just a guy with some good costuming with the skeleton thing walking to the ring. Of course, now he's known as L.A. Park. The guy who went by Laparca after this Laparca had the gimmick in WCW, he passed away in the last 2 years, and I recall how everybody was confused thinking the chairman of WCW had passed away, but that is not the case. He's now known as L.A. Park, which sounds like just like the most horribly generic parking garage in Studio City or something to that effect. As Teddy Long, they have an argument, Larry Zbysko and Scott Hudson, over whether Teddy gets 25 or 30% of the contract of his charges, which from a kayfabe perspective, that seems like an awful lot, considering the fact that most agents, I believe it's 10% in Hollywood, but I'm not sure about that. I think it's less even for athletes, because I recall reading something with Scott Boras. I thought it was like 6%. But anyway, if I couldn't be more happy about this match, our referee here is the great Mark Curtis, who I have decided is the best referee of all time, because he stays in the background. Yes, he's enthusiastic about what's going on, but he never makes himself the show, but he does it in such a way where I am entertained by his antics. He's basically the anti-Earl Hebner. And because apparently there is no God, he passed away in 1999 after a long bout with cancer, which just really bums me out at this point in time. I mean, you know, we had to watch Earl Hebner in main events for years, and Brian Hildebrand, Mark Curtis, passes away at such a young age. I really don't want to bring myself down like I was for much of last week's show. But Laparca starts out this match going with the low drop kick, trying to take Ice Train off his feet. So we got some nice psychology in this match on the Pro. Then he makes a mistake. He tries to trade blows with the bigger man. Ice Train, I keep wanting to say he reminds me of Big E, but that's very insulting to Big E, because that guy's got charisma just absolutely off the charts. And, oh, by the way, if you were going to make somebody the world champion or the universal champion, or, you know what, I don't even give a crap which belt Braun Strowman has, where you substitute somebody in for Roman Reigns. I don't know if he's on Raw or SmackDown. I really don't give a crap. Sub Big E into that freaking match, because people will like it a hell of a lot more. You know why? Because Big E is a hell of a lot better than Braun Strowman, and more or less always has been. Now, I don't know why I got into making that comparison, because I hate making the comparison. Like, I prefer making the cross-racial comparison just to confuse people. Like when I compared Mike Greer to Daniel Paille that time. I mean, I know it's two hockey players, and you don't think of too many African-Americans playing hockey, but you know, those two guys were more or less the same. Defensive forwards with absolutely no hands. So, as I said, Laparca tries to trade blows with the much bigger man, which was a mistake, a shoulder block by Ice Train, as they talk about other stuff on commentary. I mean, this is a staple of late 90s WCW. But Reggie White, against Steve Mongo McMichael at Slamboree. And that match running more than 15 minutes. Now, Reggie White, hell of an athlete, but... Well, they're talking about how he's going to be in the match.
Reggie White of the Green Bay Packers has a brand new Super Bowl ring on his finger. He will face Steve Mongo McMichael, the Four Horsemen, who also has a Super Bowl ring from his days in the Chicago Bears.
Well, that's kind of a rivalry anyway, isn't it? The Bears versus the Packers. But now you're going to get a couple guys in there with no pads. It's going to be like men in there. Reggie White's going to find out the hard way what it's like to compete, you know, without pads all covered up. Give him a chance to see what real men feel like in pain. But Mongo's ahead of the game. He's been tutored by the Four Horsemen, and I think Reggie's going to have a hard time in there against Mongo.
It's the Packers versus the Bears.
First thing I think of with Mongo against Reggie White is both of them earned their Super Bowl rings as defensive linemen against the New England Patriots at a point in time where my team had not yet won a Super Bowl. You know, the New England Patriots, they've won 6 Super Bowls in the last 20 years. I know Tom Brady, great friend of mine, great, great friend of mine, doing tremendous, tremendous work down in the state of Florida. We're going to open up the NFL season very, very soon. I don't know why I decided to do that. I guess something came over me as did I almost call him A-Train? Why am I thinking of Albert, God, Ice Train misses a charge into the corner. And Laparca comes off the top with kind of that twisting elbow move that he would do. He goes for the pin, gets a 2 count, and then goes up top again and hits a spinning heel kick for 2. But each time, Ice Train, which I almost call Big Train. What, he's not Walter Johnson, for God's sakes. Big kick out by him each time, letting us know that he is a power guy. And then they do a headbutt exchange. And Laparca gets the worst of it. Now, I don't know if that's the whole racial thing with the headbutt. I think we were past that by 1997, but who knows? As Ice Train hits a big splash from a standing position. And that is what picks up the 3 count and the victory for Ice Train, who dominates this feud against Laparca. It's Ice Train versus Laparca. It's the feud Laparca. Oh my God, it's the worst accent ever. This is the last time I drink a 9.5% beer in the course of doing the podcast. But the good part is, and I'm glad that everything is back to normal, because with it, this being a WCW C and or D show, not sure what to call it, Teddy Long, as is customary for him, decides to cut a promo to the camera. But by this point, the announcer has got better things, so they just interrupt him.
Ice Train,
we just started.
Extremely
in 1997,
agile.
You need to see a little power.
There's Train, some words from Teddy Long. Fans, stay with us when we come
now,
back.
Look at the size of that mouth.
Would have been nice if the announce team had shut the hell up, considering that Teddy Long, in my esteemed opinion, is like the 1987 Ric Flair of cutting promos to the guy holding the handheld camera on the apron immediately after a match. Like, that is as high a regard as I could possibly hold him.
On May 2nd, the vacation is over.
Last time I saw her, she was with this guy in his truck. I swear I've never seen her before in my life.
Looks like she got away from you.
My wife did not leave me. Get down on the ground.
Until you live it.
Where is she?
You'll never know what hit you. Kurt Russell.
You better pray she's alive.
Breakdown. Rated R. Starts Friday, May 2nd everywhere.
Add another one to the list of movies that have been mentioned in the course of these wrestling shows that I haven't seen, that I vow to go see, and even though I have time, I'm just never going to watch them because I'm watching too many old sporting events on YouTube or watching stuff for the show. Like that episode where it was the Ronnie Garvin Ric Flair match and Tony Schiavone's voiceover promoting Modern Problems coming up on some channel in Baltimore, and I still haven't seen that movie. And that was like 9 months ago. And I was unemployed for 3 of that. So I certainly could have watched it. But, oh well. It was rated, that movie Breakdown with Kurt Russell, as the 90th greatest action film in a 2014 survey from Time Out. Which, 90th doesn't sound like much. But, you know, consider how many action films there have been. Also, In that commercial block, we got Skittles, of course, Slim Jim, as you might expect with Randy Savage in the promotion, Visine AC, which is eye drops for allergy sufferers. I'm not entirely sure how that works. Because it's a wrestling show, of course, there's an ad for Castrol, because, you know, viscosity, thermal breakdown, all that. Vidal Sassoon for hair care products, and for Honda ATVs. Which I can't, personally, I can't look at an ATV without thinking about Steve Austin. And I didn't even watch WWE during the time period where he just drove around in that and made all the talent look terrible because he's just stunning everybody and nobody can touch him. So as they come back, they remind us that Nitro will be on at 7 p.m. prior to the NBA playoffs before we go into our next bout, which is Humoris against Adrian Byrd, who, his name did not ring a bell with me at all. He's an enhancement talent for much of the latter 90s in WCW, but he did have a shining moment on an edition in June of 1999 on Worldwide. He defeated Eric Watts in a match that kind of looks like it was a mistake three count, but I guess it was a real three count. So yes, Adrian Byrd did pick up a win over a named guy. And it's weird to think of Eric Watts after that 1992. Obviously, there was the Techno Team 2000 nonsense later on. But when you say the words Eric Watts, I think 1992, and I think horrible drop kicks. As Morris attacks early, because this is Bill DeMott, former trainer at the... You know, maybe I was thinking of him when I was thinking of A-Train earlier when I said that, but... Bill, there are many other people named Bill DeMott who take precedence over him, such as the guy who apparently brought McDonald's to the nation of New Zealand back in the 70s. His name was actually Hugh Morris, and it was Morris like Morris the cat, the proper spelling. As they spilled to the outside at one point here, and I noticed something very, very odd about the WCW Pro set. There are people in, like, lawn chairs, like the kind that you would use as a strike zone when playing wiffle ball. Like, they're sitting there like it's your kid's soccer game, but it's a WCW Pro taping. It's very, very strange. And back inside, you get a hip toss by Byrd, and all I want to do is start singing, Indiana has a new state, Byrd. Which they did for Larry Byrd back in 79 when Indiana State went undefeated until the national championship game. What, did you think I was not going to mention Larry Byrd in a match with Adrian Byrd, even though they spelled their names differently? I mean, come on. He puts his head down, a cardinal mistake for a ring veteran, and assumes control, puts the boots to Byrd, Hugh Morris does. As this match is just running a little too long, and I don't know if you can tell by like my tone of voice, I really don't give a crap about Hugh Morris. I mean, people look back at him from when he was the guy in charge at the Performance Center for WWE, and he had kind of a bullying teaching technique, and people got on him for it at the time, and as it turned out, it was Enzo Amore who was the victim of much of that bullying. So then I think over time, people were kind of like, well, I don't know, maybe we need to take another look at this. Sort of like JBL with Mauro Ranallo, how I've softened on JBL since then. I mean, we get a chin lock in this match. I mean, for God's sakes. I mean, the crowd is... They cut to the crowd, but it's actually the fun crowd shot that they do on these sort of pro and worldwide tapings where it's just people doing the thumbs down to the camera. like generic wrestling. I mean, you could have really just put them in. You could have just put them in from any other match. Just get people doing that thumbs down thing where they're over exaggerating. What I would like, and this is a wish that I have, since apparently pro wrestling is an essential business in the state of Florida, which, I mean, give me a break, how corrupt everything is there. Could we take the old WCW Pro audiences and the worldwide audiences from like these tapings in the 90s? I mean, they own the footage. Could we CGI them into like these empty arena Raws and empty arena SmackDowns? It would be like the first original production thing that they've done in about 20 years to make things look different. And also it would be kind of cool. And I would actually watch for something like that. As I almost called him DeMott, but it's Hugh Morris. He hits that Kevin Owens powerbomb. I really don't give a crap what the hell he calls it. And then he goes up to the top, hits the no laughing matter moonsault, where apparently, and I don't remember this because, as I said, I don't give a crap about Hugh Morris in the least. He rolls over so that Bird can get an arm on him for a pin for a two count. And then he rolls it back into position so that he can pick up the three count. Again, I really don't care about Hugh Morris. And I have a love for a lot of these WCW mid-carders, but I'm sorry, this guy is not one of them.
You know, life in the 90s can just be very hectic. With everything going on, it is hard to keep up with it all. But I always set aside that special time for myself that I can kick back, unwind, and catch up with the WCW hotline.
We get the dirt. Call 1-900-909-9900. Calls cost $1.59 per minute. Kids get parents' permission before calling.
I love dirt.
Little ad for the WCW hotline where Deborah returns home and gets undressed. She throws some article of clothing at Mongo, who's reading the WCW magazine, and she gets into a bubble-filled bath and is talking on the phone, you know, listening to the hotline. A corded telephone, I might add, which just seems kind of funny in retrospect. What I did not know is that the two of them, Steve McMichael, of course, a famous football player from the Chicago Bears at the time, was set up with Deborah because Deborah had met Mongo's mother on an airplane. So Mom set her son up on this date with Deborah Marshall, which I think is her maiden name. So just kind of a funny way that I guess those two met. In this ad break, we get extra bubble gum. To which I must confess, I cannot blow a bubble with bubble gum, and I never could as a kid. It's a private shame that I guess is now somewhat public. A Slick 50 Motor Oil and Motel 6 once again, where they actually kind of make reference to something that was going on at the time, where Bill Clinton was effectively selling access to the Lincoln bedroom, where if you donate $100,000 to my political action committee or something to that effect, you can have a night in the Lincoln bedroom, which is tawdry as all hell, but kind of par for the course for the Clintons when you really think about it. Quite frankly, I'm sick of the Clintons as a whole. Bill, Hillary, the whole lot of them. I mean, I guess maybe not Chelsea because she doesn't talk that often. But whenever Hillary pipes up about something that's going on in the world, my retort is always, you lost to that guy, okay? Because, oh, you got more popular votes? Well, guess what? It's not like they changed the rules of the election going in. It was always for the Electoral College votes. That's how it works. You're supposed to win states in our Federalist Republic that we have. So anyway, I don't really want to go too far down the political road, but interesting ad here for cologne with Dallas Cowboys quarterback Troy Aikman, who is definitely not gay.
It's third and long. Clearly, they're thinking pass.
I'm telling you, Troy Aikman's third down completion percentage is out of sight.
They line up in a passing formation, and Aikman is back to pass. He's looking.
He's got a receiver wide open.
He's still looking.
What's going on?
And, Aikman's down.
Oh, he had all the time in the world. You've got to ask yourself, what was this guy thinking?
Brute, it's all part of the game.
All right, guys, same play.
Premise of the ad is it's a sandlot football game, and Aikman goes back to pass. He's holding the ball because there's a woman, a very attractive one, rushing him and just tackles him and takes him down, and he's apparently very aroused by this. So why did I bring up Troy Aikman's sexuality? Well, it's because Skip Bayless, you know, the annoying guy on Fox Sports, he did not necessarily call Troy Aikman gay back in the mid-90s, but he strongly inferred it through various means. I don't want to walk too far down that road. And Troy Aikman got very pissed off about it because it was, you know, digging into his private life, which had, you know, basically no bearing on anything that was going on. And as far as I know, he still holds that grudge. And it's one of my favorite things about Troy Aikman is the fact that he hates Skip Bayless as much as I do, which I'm not sure was possible.
You know, when you're a little kid and you
back talk your parents, Larry. What do you get? You get a sent out to the woodshed, put in the corner. What can we do to Kevin Nash? What can JJ do to Kevin Nash? We saw what Kevin said on Monday Nitro last week. We also heard some words from former NWO referee Nick Patrick.
So many people struggling to get microphone time on WCW Monday Nitro, which is 2 hours at this point. There's no thunder for other guys to maybe spread their wings on that show at this point in time. And Nick Patrick gets to speak for nearly a full minute on a Nitro. Maybe not the decision I would have made, but you know what? I mean, they're ahead in the ratings, and they can afford to punt away a segment by letting Nick Patrick, former NWO ref, beg for his job back with WCW, because he's not going to screw up a big moment at some point down the road. But the good thing about this is we get a bonus episode of According to Larry. It's kind of like According to Larry is on the network schedule, and the show that is on after it got canceled after 6 episodes because it was terrible. Like that show American Embassy that was on Fox back around 2002. Once we realized that how many freaking stories could you do based around an American embassy in a foreign country? But anyway, Larry has some choice words for Nick Patrick.
Nick Patrick again, and now he's crying the blues because the New World Order stabbed him in the back. But turnabout seems to be fair play to me, Scott. So I don't know if I'm going to trust Nick Patrick. And I will see. Time will tell the story. But what J.J. Dillon can do is he can stop all the injustice, like what happened to the Steiner boys. There will be no more championships taken away. Guys like Scott Hall and Kevin Nash are going to have to go in like men and walk out like men. They won't have all the legal loopholes to protect them.
Even the most ardent Larry hater has to take your cap off to him and say, at least your character is somewhat meaningful at this point in time and never flips, maintains some constancy during all the madness of the New World Order. Oh, God, I'm starting to sound like Larry myself. So maybe what's a good way to recover? Oh, I know. Why don't I just play what Nick Patrick had to say?
First off, I'd like to apologize to all the WCW employees that may have been affected by my actions recently. But there are a few people that I will not apologize to now, nor will I ever apologize to those people. When I first joined the NWO, I thought it was going to be an opportunity for the little man to speak out, people that's never had a voice, to be able to speak up for themselves, people that's been ground under by the system but been able to land on their feet, to be able to make a statement. But now, it seems to me that the very people that I wanted to make a statement against are the people that the NWO are catering to.
This may sound like something that's easy to say because we know everything with the benefit of hindsight and how the NWO turned out, but from a kayfabe perspective, shouldn't WCW have put people like Nick Patrick on trial, like basically have Nuremberg-style trials for these dudes who turned and now all of a sudden want back in? No, sorry. We're going to keep you out and we're going to save our Starcade main event from you ruining it, quite frankly. So J.J. Dillon comes out on Nitro and is talking to Mean Gene Okerlund. He's been named the head of the vaunted WCW Executive Committee. Let's just hope that after 2 years or 2 years after the Ric Flair reinstatement led to a 2-2-1 tie, that perhaps they changed the rules and are not allowing people to abstain from a vote on freaking kayfabe storyline. Oh my God, it's so ridiculous. But JJ is now in charge.
Well, we want to look into all facets of World Championship Wrestling and really reevaluate all aspects of the company.
Gene, I hate to interrupt you here.
Hold on a second. Yes, Tony, go ahead.
I'm sure JJ was watching, as you were and the fans were, when Nick Patrick came up here and made the plea to come back to WCW. What does he think of that, and what has been going on with Nick Patrick?
JJ, good point just made by Tony Schiavone. A plea was made earlier tonight by
former WCW referee Nick Patrick. I think this guy's got a clean slate. He wants to come back. It's got to be something you're looking at.
Well, Nick Patrick did petition for reinstatement. At this point, it is being taken under advisement.
I don't remember that happening a lot, where Tony would cut into an interview and basically feed the question to Mean Gene. Just a really strange sort of one-off thing, because I don't remember that ever happening on other Nitros, because I feel like that would have been talked about just as a weird, odd production element. So taking it under advisement, you'd be better off just blowing it off like Major League Baseball did with the Pete Rose stuff and have been doing for so many years. Rightfully so, by the way, because it's not like Pete Rose has made any sort of amends for what he did. I talked about the Pete Rose thing several episodes ago. So on Eric Bischoff, who has been stripped of his authority by the WCW Executive Committee. Now, JJ is there. Eric is got this, well, I'll let him explain.
Gene, as soon as the meeting ended this morning and I was aware of what my responsibilities were, the first thing was to get a group of lawyers and look really in depth at the contract of Eric Bischoff. And I've got some good news and I've got some bad news. The good news is that Eric Bischoff has absolutely no authority.
That is good news, J.J. Dillon. This crowd responding.
And I think that Dr. Schiller made it crystal clear when he came out here and made the announcement of the suspension that Eric Bischoff has no financial responsibility, no contractual authority with World Championship Wrestling. And even though he's been very visible the last couple of weeks, he still has no authority.
Bischoff makes his way out there to confront. And while his character was effective in this time period, you get diminishing returns the further it goes until he just descends into madness challenging Vince McMahon to a fight at Slamboree 98, which he knew he wasn't going to come to. You know why? Because Vince McMahon might be a horrible person, but he is not going to skip his daughter's graduation at Boston University to go out to Worcester, Massachusetts and fight a guy with delusions of grandeur. The character is still pretty good at this point, and making him not the authority figure anymore is probably a good move, because having him in that power would have burnt him out, I think, a lot quicker. The problem, though, is it sets a bad precedent, sort of like I talked about with the McMahons and how the Vince Shane match being good at WrestleMania X7 set the horrible precedent of, well, clearly having a lot of McMahons out there means good things, when it was more of an outlier than anything else. Eric, being this authority figure, you know, and we haven't got out from authority figures really for about two decades at this point. It's like, can we have a wrestling promotion where stuff just sort of happens organically like it used to? JJ goes on to explain that the NWO contracts of Big Bubba and Michael Wall Street are null and void because of Eric not having the power to sign them to said contracts. So that explains the whole Michael Wall Street thing, where he would just wear the WCW with the Ghostbusters sign on it, which was kind of a weird storyline. But then again, with IRS, the former IRS, I mean, what are you really going to do at that point?
Bottom line is, you can't stop me from doing anything I want to do with the NWO. You know it. Everybody at Turner knows it. And everybody here knows it. And they love me for it, don't you?
Whatever. I do what I want.
I mean, at the time, in 1997 eyes, this is so good. But as I said, they had absolutely no idea how to wrap up the angle, which, you know, is kind of a huge part of storytelling in professional wrestling. You're going to have to wrap stuff up at a certain point. And it does get irritating looking back that their only comeback at this point is Bite Me, you know, with both Bischoff and Kevin Nash. As they show now Rey Mysterio being stretchered out after being powerbombed by Kevin Nash, and I am so happy, not because Rey got powerbombed, but this is definitely the moment where the guy that I worked with at PetSmart got the whole thing of, oh no, he's going to powerbomb Rey Mysterio Jr., and how we used to powerbomb 8-pound bags of dog or cat food and pretend that it was Rey Mysterio Jr., and that is the genesis of it, which is very, very nice.
Larry Jones has a nickname.
It's Chipper.
Chipper makes the catch.
A better nickname would have been the Incredible Human Vacuum, but that doesn't, you know, fit on a baseball card.
Braves and Dodgers, 7:35 Eastern tomorrow on the Superstation.
They go to a very long ad break, but luckily there's a commercial for Braves baseball airing the next night on TBS, because everything else is pretty bland. It's Skittles again, Castrol GTX, a Craftsman. But the Braves game that next night, the 1997 Braves were pretty damn good and probably should have won the National League pennant, instead losing to the Florida Marlins in the NLCS, including that horrible Game 5 with Leivan Hernandez being aided by Eric Gregg's increasingly, the strike zone that was expanding quicker than his waist. The Braves were off to a really hot start in April that year, back when they actually played baseball. 18-5 record is where they got out to, and they against the Dodgers, they won 14-0. What, did the Dodgers think that it was a World Series game or something? Tom Glavine, 7 shutout innings. And that was the Braves team. That was the weird Kenny Lofton 1 year with Atlanta, where he got traded there for Marquise Grissom and David Justice, and then left Atlanta as a free agent after the season and just re-signed with Cleveland. But he's very good, 409 on base. But he was 27-47 stealing bases, which is a terrible percentage. You want to be up around 80% on stolen bases in order for it to be worth it. 10 years with Cleveland and 1 year with 10 other teams. That was Kenny Lofton's career, including the 2004 Yankees led by Derek Jeter, the only team to have blown a 3-0 series lead in Major League Baseball history. I don't know. Kenny Lofton, he would be a candidate for what they always called the Hall of Very Good. Definitely not good enough to make the Baseball Hall of Fame, but he was a very good player for a long time. That's how you find yourself with 11 different teams towards the end of your career. You know, you got useful skills that'll play anywhere. So we go back, promotional consideration, I should mention. Super Soaker, which another one of those things that always on the wrestling shows at that time. Like, I remember Super Soaker sponsoring WWF pay-per-views around that time. And I gotta say, I mean, by that point, I was pretty much over water guns. I mean, I was a little too old for that crap at that point. But it was heartening to see that the technology had gotten much better since I was a kid, as there's a promo for Slamboree again.
WCW presents Slamboree, live Sunday, May 18th, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, only on pay-per-view. Call your local cable or satellite company now for availability.
And Deborah pulled the foot up on the rope.
She gets caught, she can't do it. If you don't get caught, you can do it.
I think she got caught, and I think she got caught from the family.
Mongo!
Oh, Mongo! There's Reggie White! Reggie White has come out! Came out with the Halliburton, and Reggie White of the Packers has stopped the Bears on the goal line.
He didn't stop any Bears on the goal line.
Yes, he did.
He got to come get it from me, baby.
Steve McMichael with Deborah versus Reggie White.
Seems so entirely random to have Reggie White on this pay-per-view. I mean, granted, it's the NFL offseason, so there's a very limited number of months. But you also have Kevin Green on the same show in the main event with Piper and Flair against Six, Hall, and Nash, which is a pretty fun match as well. So, you know, the return of Ric Flair, as I mentioned earlier. And his entrance was quite a sight with a hot crowd there in Charlotte, North Carolina. See, I would have understood the Reggie White thing a little bit more if this was taking place in Wisconsin, or if it was taking place in even Philadelphia, because at the time he was generally considered the greatest Philadelphia Eagle in franchise history. I mean, he played for them longer than he played for the Packers. But the fact that match went 15 minutes, and yes, I have watched it since I recorded the bit earlier in the show. I mean, it's not terrible. I wouldn't give it -3 stars, but whoever made the decision to give that 15 minutes, I mean, maybe give Regal and Ultimo Dragon a little bit more time. Hey, speaking of Lord Steven Regal, as he's still known, of course, as I mentioned, he would drop the Lord. Up next, he is taking on his old pal, Doc Dean. a UK guy from Liverpool. Apparently, they may have had a falling out before Doc's death in 2018 at the age of 48, at least according to Regal's Twitter at the time. He was in the Liverpool Lads tag team with Robbie Brookside. That's mainly what I remembered him for, but also for this match, because it is a Lord Steven Regal match on WCW Pro, WCW World Fight. I remember this match for the finish, which I'll get to in due time. I realized what I need to do now is go in and download a bunch of Regal matches from Worldwide and Pro, because I've said many times that I love how he would always, quote-unquote, work the marks on the way to the ring, because it's a very unique crowd down at Disney, Universal Studios, wherever the hell they're taping this. And Regal is just a master, like, pointing fingers at everybody, just acting disgusted. So what I need to do is download all those matches and just make a 10-minute long supercut of just Regal's entrances on these WCW C&D shows and post it to my channel, because I will watch the hell out of that video, because sometimes I get a little too obsessive about certain things. Like, I didn't expect the day, as I record this, to watch Jacoby Ellsbury stealing home against the Yankees from 2009, a game I was at, by the way. I did not expect to watch that 20 times, because I'm mesmerized by about 8 different things that happened. That's like Regal's entrances on these Worldwide and Pro shows. He's just the absolute master. Now, him and Dean had another match on the June 22nd edition of Worldwide, so completely different, similar finish, but not exactly the same. Regal drops Lord by, actually, it's by Slamboree, it's when they refer to it on his way out, and they talk about how he was the television champion previously, losing it to Prince Iaukea, who we're going to see a little bit later. I think when this was taped, he actually was the television champion, but he's not coming out with the belt, because it's literally almost 3 months has passed since this was taped, and they made the wise decision to not have guys wear belts on these shows by this point in time. But when he was the TV champion, you got to tip your hat. You could argue maybe Arn Anderson or somebody else is the greatest television champion of all time, but Regal definitely in that conversation.
He's a former world television champion, and what a fighting champion he was. He took that title to Germany, all over Europe. He took it to Mexico, to Japan, and of course here in the United States. A fighting champion he was before coming up a little short against Prince Iaukea.
Now, I don't know about Japan and Mexico, but Regal did go over to Europe in the fall of 96 and make defenses over there in the UK in September and in Germany in October. So they're not completely BSing there. They are kind of adhering to an actual thing that occurred. And God, what an amazing talent this guy. He's everything that I want in my wrestling. It's like, I don't want to say it's a Mount Rushmore. That may feel a little cliched, but there's just like this subset of guys who have all the tools of what I want. Regal's one of them. Terry Funk is another guy. Randy Savage is another one. I mean, maybe I would put Ric Flair in there as well, but there are certain holes that I can poke in the Ric Flair veneer over the years, and I have on this show. It's the Ultimo Dragon match at Slamboree. No surprise that it was awesome as the opener, but a bit of a surprise that the crowd was chanting for Regal, because Ultimo Dragon was out there with Sonny Ono, and Sonny eventually kicks him in the back of the head and leads to that match finishing up that way, with Ultimo becoming a babyface, and hopefully them never calling him Ultimate Dragon again, because they put Ultimo Dragon on there, and then they would refer to him as Ultimate Dragon. It was a really strange thing. Mark Curtis is our referee here, so this is just an absolute dream match for me, because we got probably my favorite ref and one of my favorite wrestlers, as we get a USA chant from the crowd at the pro taping for two British guys going at it. There is just nothing better than that. As a shoulder block by Dean, and Regal is woozy, and he's selling it just so beautifully, not overselling it, but doing it in such a way that is also entertaining. As he grabs the arm and wrist, and he kind of is doing that digit manipulation that you see an awful lot now with Pete Dunne or whatever his name is on NXT UK, who seems to make that, I guess, a cliched spot, because every single time I've seen him wrestle, he does that. As Dean kips up, and Regal, once he's at a disadvantage, he goes over and grabs the rope very daintily, they might add, on commentary. A European uppercut and a full Nelson, but Dean is able to escape that, gets a cradle for two, tries a short clothesline, Regal does, so he gets backdropped twice, as a matter of fact, once coming out of the corner, and a drop kick to the back by Doc Dean. Regal's giving quite a bit in this match, considering that he is a pushed guy, but the way he works this in the end, it all makes sense, because he's just waiting to capitalize on one mistake. He's that kind of wrestler. But he does get drop-kicked again after he'd gone out and taken a powder on the outside briefly. And then we get the mistake. Finally, no, it is not the SD Jones Memorial Charge or putting his head down, a cardinal mistake for a ring veteran. As Doc Dean heads up top and he misses a dive, sort of a cross body onto Regal, who kind of looks at him quizzically, and he's very, very woozy still, but realizes now, oh, now I've got him. And he, you know, gestures, he points, makes sure all those dumbasses in the crowd know what's coming. Because Dean is now on his stomach in a perfect position for Lord Steven Regal to lock in the Regal stretch. And I absolutely love that finish. I mean, you have to be really good to make me care about the finish in an enhancement match and for me to remember said match over two decades later. I mean, Lord Steven Regal, without question, and I know that this might not amount to a hill of beans, but this is my hill, and these are my beans. The greatest WCW worldwide / pro worker in history.
I think Regal's looking more like a vulture looking over some roadkill.
That little fake emotion, that sympathy from Lord Steven Regal. Here's the Regal stretch, Larry.
And he's going to have it, a hook right there. His kid's in trouble.
That's it. That is going to do it. Doc Dean submits to the Regal stretch, and Lord Steven Regal is on a mission to get that TV title back.
Yeah, he wants the belt back, and believe me, he can do it. He's got the technical skills.
And let us not forget Regal's feud in 1994 with Larry Zbyszko that made a babyface out of Larry Z, of all things, 14 years after the Bruno feud. Regal is so good at being a heel that he got the people to get behind Larry freaking Zbyszko. And what an absolute magician. I love Regal so much. I know he and I should get an apartment together.
It's Austin Powers!
In his time, he was the coolest swinger alive.
Yeah, baby, yeah!
Mike Myers.
A lot's changed since 1967.
Austin Powers, rated PG-13, starts Friday, May 2nd.
Looking back, it's amazing that I did not see that movie in the theater. I feel like it would have been primed to see it at least once, but never happened. I did see Austin Powers 2 in the theater, and give me that movie over the first Austin Powers every day of the week just because of Heather Graham over Elizabeth Hurley. I mean, I can't help but look at Elizabeth Hurley and wonder, and I just look at her and I say, there's a reason why Hugh Grant went trolling for prostitutes.
No.
Who knows? But Hugh Grant is responsible for his own actions. Only he knows, and I really don't care to look up if he ever explained himself other than on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, when Jay was like, what the hell were you thinking? This block of commercials outside of the Austin Powers, very representative of 1997. Yeah, milk ad, which felt like they were all over the place during the decade. 100 Grand Bar, one of the most underrated candy bars that there is. And I know during that time period, 100 Grand would be the candy bar that I would get if the O. Henry bar wasn't available in whatever store that I was in. And Super Clean again, Pringles, they re-air the Austin Powers thing. But there's no more creature of the 1990s, a thing that doesn't really exist so much today, than 1-800-COLLECT ads or any like 1010, 321, that whole deal. And I'm going to play this one because it has the dearly departed Phil Hartman.
1-800-COLLECT presents Max Jerome, Private Eye.
When I saw her, my heart started pounding like a heavyweight speed bag until she started calling Collect without dialing 1-800-COLLECT.
You could be saving up to 44% by dialing 1-800-COLLECT, Angel. Let me show you how it's done.
It's so easy. Now let me show you how it's done.
Any Joe will tell you, 1-800-COLLECT is the easy way to save up to 44%.
Now, I've chastised people who are like, well, The Simpsons was no good after season whatever. I will admit that something was lost forever when Phil Hartman was murdered in 1998, mainly because they replaced all of his characters with Gil, and Gil is like my least favorite Simpsons character of all time. He's got Change the Channel heat with me. So why don't we just go right into the final bout here on WCW Pro as Prince Iaukea, which is probably mispronounced, but that's the way they pronounce it on TV, against Chavo Guerrero Jr. And in researching the Prince, and you remember mainly about him, how they turned him into the artist formerly known as Prince Iaukea, which just made him into an absolute joke. And he's not terrible in the ring. I mean, he's not like, you know, going to be working at a Rey Mysterio level or anything, but he's perfectly fine. As this odd rumor of where he got his push because he was having an affair with the wife of a WCW executive. I don't know where the hell that came from or how it even makes any sense, but then again, there's so much about WCW that's completely inexplicable that I'm not willing to rule anything out. Now, this match here was taped on February 8th of 97. So I was actually able to get the date on when this was. Now, Prince Iaukea has his little run with the TV title, but that doesn't start until after this would have been taped. Meanwhile, Chavo Jr. is just really a guy in 1997, kind of like Hector Guerrero in 1986 Crockett, as I covered last week. And they do some mat work to start, you know, just kind of generic stuff, as Larry Z says that Gory Guerrero, because they had mentioned the Guerrero wrestling family, that Gory used to come at him in the Olympic Auditorium when he would beat up Chavo Sr. Now, I was wondering, is Larry BSing us here? And there may be a kernel of truth to it, although I think Larry was a babyface out there when he worked in L.A. in 75 and 76, when Larry was away from the WWWF and going off doing something else. I know he was down in Latin America for a little while as well. You don't really think of Larry Zbysko as working that style, but he was pretty swift back in the day if you watch some of his matches. And yet the test of strength, always an interesting spot when you got two smaller guys like these two, and Prince gets Chavo down. Again, he's not bad in the ring. He's another example of a character being so over-the-top bad that it kind of stained him going forward, which is a shame. You hate to see that, unless it's Terry Taylor, of course, in which case it's perfectly fine. Chavo over the top with a sunset flip for two, and then locks it a side headlock takeover, but Iaukea gets a corkscrew head scissors takeover, a nice little move there, as Chavo rolls to the outside to take a powder, and Prince tries to jump on him from the apron and just completely misses and nearly face plants on the floor as Larry and Scott are discussing Eddie Guerrero's recent change in attitude. And yes, this is the moment where Eddie kind of goes from plain babyface and starts to really establish a character for himself and become the Eddie Guerrero that we would all know and love. The flying burrito headbutt by Chavo, same one we saw twice on last week's show, and a Northern Lights suplex gets two, but again, Prince gets a side headlock, and Chavo pushed off, goes off the ropes, misses on a cross body, and Iaukea follows up with a Samoan drop, but when he goes to the top rope, he is actually going to the side. He's going to try for a slingshot splash, which misses, and Chavo takes immediate advantage, so this is mildly similar to the Regal Doc Dean match that we just saw. Instead of Chavo going for a submission of some kind, he just goes for a pinning combination with an Oklahoma roll and gets the 1-2-3. And I am actually very surprised by this because, as I said, Chavo Guerrero Jr. is just a guy at this point, and Prince Iaquea had a TV title reign before this. But remember what I said before the bout. This was taped in early February before all of that Prince Iaquea stuff. He basically ascended, got that push, and is now being de-pushed, and basically it's all wrapped around when this match was taped and when it aired. Just very, very strange, but also very WCW-like. And that's it. They go off the air right from here. No big wrap-up, no telling us what's going to be on the pro next week. I believe they do remind us that Nitro is only going to be 1 hour. Oh, 1 hour wrestling shows. Maybe I should do that Nitro at some point. But then again, it'll be a while because I'm already doing the WCW show from this weekend. So that is it for WCW Pro for April 27th, 1997. An advisory that this Monday, Patriots Day here in Massachusetts, although I'm not sure anybody will know or remember because there's no Boston Marathon or anything, beyond the Place to Be podcast with JT Rosero and Scott Criscolo talking October 1990 WWF Saturday Night's main event. That one should be a lot of fun. I do urge you as well to check out the back catalog of Steve Bennett, my good pal, the sportscasters. I don't see a new episode for him out this week, but I'm taping this a little bit earlier because I'm trying to get ahead of schedule for this sort of thing. Give myself a breather so that when I tape GFA Live, which I don't know, I'm going to take that week to week, but I enjoy doing it because it takes about an hour and 15 minutes to put together a show that lasts an hour and 10 minutes at most. So that's been a lot of fun with my good pal Keithy. Now, on the Our Vantage Point podcast, they're in episode 172 this week, and they've started a Royal Flush and Royal Ranking series, the best and worst of WWF, WWE tag team champions. I don't know if they have a cutoff point for that sort of thing, because once you get into the 21st century, things get a little barren with some tag champs. Although some of the best ones have been in more recent years. It would be the Usos, the Dearly Departed Revival, the New Day, or the Bar, Cesaro and Sheamus, one of the great tag teams that will never get their due because you just see them more as two singles wrestlers for whatever reason. So do check that out, the Our Vantage Point podcast. Now, I don't have a YouTube comment theater this week because even though it's on YouTube, there's only three comments, and one of the comments is from me, and it would be really, really self-serving if I read my comment, but I'm going to do it anyway. There's nothing better in professional wrestling than Lord Steven Regal working the crowd at WCW Pro/Worldwide tapings on his way to the ring, 38 minutes, 33 seconds. So I apologize for that self-serving gesture. And to make it up to you at this time, I am going to go back to something from earlier in the show, and I'm going to recite the lyrics from the hit song at this time in 1997 by the Spice Girls, Wannabe. Yo, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Oh, tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Oh, tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I wanna ha, I wanna ha, I wanna ha, I wanna ha, I wanna really, 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 really want. Zigzag, ah. Oh my God, I'm gonna die if I go through that entire song. But like I said, there's directions. If you want my future, forget my past. If you want to get with me, you better make it fast. Don't go wasting my precious time. Get your act together, we could be just fine. I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. All right, I'll skip over that part. Oh, what do you think about that? Now you know how I feel. Say you can handle my love. Are you for real? I won't be hasty. I'll give you a try. If you really bug me, I'll say goodbye. So no guaranteed contracts with the Spice Girls. You can get cut at any point. If you want to be my lover, you got to get with my friends. Make it last forever. Friendship never ends. If you want to be my lover, you've got to give. You've got to give. Taking is too easy, but that's the way it is. Here's a story from A to Z. You want to get with me, you got to listen carefully. We got M in the place who likes it in your face. You got G like MC who likes it on easy V. Don't come for free. She's a real lady, and as for me, hi, you'll see. Slam your body down and wind it all around. Slam your body down and wind it all around. If you want to be my lover, you got to get with my friends. Make it last forever.
Friendship never ends. If you want to be my lover, you have got to give. Taking is too easy, but that's the way it is.
All right, now that I've reverted into the Eric Cartman voice singing the Spice Girls, this sucker is just completely off the rails. And if you enjoy such hooey and nonsense, like you just heard me doing spoken word Shatner Spice Girls into Eric Cartman, leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, this wonderful wrestling podcast that has approximately 58% wrestling content. By leaving a 5-star review, you provide what is known as social proof that you are listening to and enjoying this podcast. And I thank those who have left reviews in the past week. There's at least a couple more of them. I think it's up to 71 or 72. I would definitely love to get that over the century mark in the coming months. So if you haven't left a review for Greetings from Allentown, please do so. You will win a place in my heart forever. And I thank you so much for listening. And tune in next week. Oh, yeah, next week. I should tell you what next week's show is going to be, since I've actually planned it out somewhat going forward. I'm going to go back to Memphis again, because I love Memphis wrestling so much. And I also love the year 1986. And this edition from June the 8th, I believe it is, Paul Diamond is in a tag team with Joe Ledoux. And he learns that maybe being in a tag team with Joe Ledoux is a little bit more than he had bargained for. And all that and the usual Memphis stuff on that show. And Paul Diamond is in for a big surprise, I can assure you. You're like, Paul Diamond, the guy, Kato from the Orient Express? Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. This is going to be a good one. So do check that out next Thursday. Be on the lookout on the feed for GFA Live at some point. Like I said, it's so quick to put together. I have a good time with my pal Keithy doing that. So do join me next Thursday for another exciting episode of Greetings from Allentown.
If you wanna be my lover.